Gilbert Arantxa.
Here.
Thank you. David Byers.
Stuart Bruner here for David Byers.
Thank you. Tim Romer.
I'm here.
Lev Gornick. J.R. Sloan?
Here.
Thank you. Representative Jeff Winninger? Senator Rick Gray? Richard Stavnik?
Rebecca Pereira here for Richard Stavnik.
Thank you so much. Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
All right, thank you, Shay. Well, hey, welcome everybody to our November meeting, and we will I'll go ahead and remind everybody, because this is a public meeting, we will accept comments, and the link to provide those comments is provided in the agenda. Please fill out that form. It will be routed to the team members, and they will review that and provide that information in. Without anything else to announce, I will go ahead and we'll move into our first item here, which is approval of our recording for the October meeting. We have two separate items, so I'll need two separate motions, one for the main meeting and then one for our executive session. So unless there were any questions or comments on the recordings, I will take a motion with regard to the main meeting recording, the first item.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve.
Thank you, Eddie. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chair, this is Jaggi. I second.
Thank you, Jaggi. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, thank you. Now we'll take a motion with regard to the executive session recording and minutes from that.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve.
Thank you, Eddie. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you, Tim. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you very much. Another unanimous approval. We did have the consent item for the Department of Child Safety, which is just an informational update from them. Is there any desire to discuss that, or can we accept that informational update as provided? Okay. Then I'm going to call an audible, and I'm going to take the next item in a different order. I'm going to pull forward the Department of Health Services vaccine management administration system to try and get that earlier in the meeting. This is a time sensitive item for them, and I want to provide them the courtesy of getting to this as quickly as possible. So once we have that up, I'll turn it over to the appropriate engagement manager to kick things off.
Good afternoon, everybody. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Haley Greenberg. I am an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I am joined here today by members of the Arizona Department of Health Services who will introduce themselves now, followed by a brief overview of the project.
Hi, this is Susan Robinson. I'm the informatics supervisor here for the Department of Health.
Hi, this is Paula Mattingly. I'm the CIO, Department of Health.
Hi, this is Neeta Surutu. I'm the Health IT Architect, Department of Health.
So this is Ravi Pitti, Enterprise Architect, Department of Health.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Arizona Department of Health Services is seeking to implement a COVID-19 vaccine point of dispensing or pod scheduling and administration solution. ADHS counties and tribes will have the ability to administer and manage the setup and operations of their county clinics vaccine pods. This solution will provide a single source tool with a consistent process across the state to manage and monitor the vaccine administration process. At this time, I will turn this over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions you may have.
I want to kick this off by first saying thank you to the engagement team. You know, without their efforts, we wouldn't have been on the agenda today. in such short notice, they were able to get us on the agenda. So thank you, Haley. Thank you, team. With that, next slide, please. So the CDC has advised us to be ready with delivery of COVID-19 vaccines this month. So it's really essential for us to have a vaccine point of dispensing locations and an administrative solution to manage that and have it operational as soon as possible, especially to cater to that vulnerable population that's out there. And in this regard, ADHS is collaborating with the county and tribal public health departments and is looking to implement a centralized solution that will facilitate setup and management of pods, patient self-registration and self-check-in, vaccine administration and reporting, and patient follow-up. The ADHS Health Emergency Operations Center, HEOC, will manage and coordinate the COVID-19 statewide campaign with all the partners, with the county public health departments, with the tribal public health, and all our health system partners out there. Next slide, please. We obviously had to go through a selection process. We tried to hurry this up, but we've done a lot of diligence around it. ADHS actually collaborated with all the counties and the tribal departments to assess the scope and functionality that is desired. And we reviewed four different proposals: Salesforce with Infosys, Google Cloud Platform with MTX, PrepMod, and Qualtrics. You're all familiar with Qualtrics. We have presented Qualtrics prior for contact tracing. PrepMod had a lot of the desired functionality. The only limitation we noticed was resources. They definitely had a resource constraint. They have a development team with just 9 individuals, and they're getting ready to roll out the solution to 5 different states in parallel, and it just didn't seem right to be constrained with resources at this time. So then ADHS narrowed this down to Salesforce with and also MTX with Google Cloud Platform. We did pick GCP with MTX for multiple reasons, one being ease of use, speed of implementation to go live, pricing structure, subject matter expertise, and also references. You know, we had to do a little bit diligence to that as well. Next slide, please. The solution will be hosted on Google Cloud Platform. County and tribal public health departments can set up and operate their pods and report vaccine administrations to the Arizona Immunization Registry, ACES. Next slide, please. I think this visual will do a lot of diligence to the proposed solution. We'll start off with pod administrators, and that refers to county health departments and tribal health departments. They will set up all their pods. They will add pod staff to the clinics. They will manage the duration and the number of appointments they want to have at that pod, because sometimes they might not have as many clinicians as they would like at certain locations. They will also manage the inventory of that pod and decide where, if they want to extend a pod or cut down on appointments if they have met the need. They'll basically have full rights to manage the pods on their side. And then patients can obviously register themselves. They can self-register. They can reschedule by themselves. They can provide their consent electronically, which is great. They can provide insurance information, but there is no way to verify the insurance information yet. Patients can do self-check-in, and they can also do follow-up. Agency administration, I'll get to that last, but the POD staff is referring to, doesn't have to be clinicians, but you can have other staff that are running the POD that can actually manage the contactless check-in or any walk-in appointments that might be. The vaccine administration clinicians will manage the administration and the reporting of any adverse reactions that might come up. But lastly, but not the least, is the ADHS admins. And this is critical because this is our HEOC that will be managing and aggregating the data for any kind of a predictive insight and to look at all the trends in regards to the COVID-19 vaccine. Next slide, please. This is a detailed workflow that kind of walks you through patient registration for an appointment and self-scheduling and how they will receive a QR code on their mobile phone or email and they can do contactless check-in. And then they can get to a clinic and a vaccine gets administered. It kind of walks you through all the details. Next slide, please. So responsibilities wise, obviously this is a shared responsibility between the vendor and us, but really we have a team of folks that will be providing insight and oversight. We'll have subject matter experts. We will have HL7 analysts working with us. We will have our network team, DBA team working with us. So we will be covered. We will ensure that the deliverables are intact and rolled out in time. Next slide, please. This kind of walks us through the program structure. I wish we had more folks on the call today, but as you can see, the program sponsor is Jessica Rigler. We do have Susan on the call. She's part of the HEOC and will be providing oversight from the business side. And we also have Paula and Ravi here. Next slide, please. This is the timeline, and this is one of the main reasons we went with MTX. They offered a 4 weeks deliverable. The first week will be the project initiation and kickoff with requirements gathering, and then 2 weeks of development effort and development sprints. The third week will be, fourth week will be dedicated to regression testing and deployment planning, pretty much, for go live. Next slide, please. From a cost perspective, the Google Cloud platform subscription came out at $319 with reseller fees. And as you can see, this professional cost from MTX, that includes the vaccine management solution. It also includes additional development integration efforts from their side, and also includes training and deployment. And it also has a year's worth of MNO. And then we've slated what we'll be looking at for year two on. Obviously, the subscription can vary based on need and usage. But you can see the MNO from MTX is about 73 grand. And then we have the GCP platform subscription on year two and on. Next slide, please. What success looks like for us truly is ensuring that these counties are successful with the administration of COVID-19 vaccine and with the administration and management of these pods. And from an HEOC perspective, I know Susan can speak more to this, but I believe it's more about the ability and the measure of the coverage that we're going to get statewide. That will clearly be a success measure for us. With that, Haley, we are ready for Q&A.
Okay, then I will open it up to the committee for questions.
Mr. Chair, I got a couple questions.
Go ahead.
So I did contact the county
health services team about this project, only because now I'm part of the county. And I wanted to get their feedback. So the county was on a journey to actually roll out its own version of this using Salesforce. So I'd like to understand, was there an RFP process that went through the technical aspects between Salesforce and MTX and Google? I love to know what that is. I'm not familiar with MTX and their product. I mean, do they have any reference accounts of doing anything like this? I mean, obviously Salesforce is well known around the world, but anyways, the county has been partnering with ADHS, and it sounds like, you know, they're on board with that. But from a technical perspective, I like to understand what was the compelling, you know, wins for the MTX, Google versus the Salesforce.
This is Paula. I will try to take that. Eddie, the counties were participating throughout this process, and they were parts of demos that were provided by all of these four solutions that we looked at. And it seemed to be unanimous which vendor they liked. And I think the Google MTX solution had a lot of, they implemented a system for Chicago on the Salesforce platform, MTX did. And so they know a lot about the subject matter expertise. They have built this product in essence there before, so they have all that information. And I think that was a strong reason why everybody seemed to like them. Functionality wise, you know, they both the Salesforce and the Google groups would work with us through our requirements and our workflows, but it seemed like Google and MTX had a lot of these pieces working in other states, and it was more of a matter of configuring it specifically for our workflows. And so we felt like a lot of it had been deployed before, is being utilized, and we thought that got us time to market quicker.
So is this product from MTX and Google actually working in some states now as references today?
The one that MTX built is actually working in Chicago. It was built on a Salesforce platform, but they basically created the app.
And why would MTX not continue using Salesforce versus going to Google? What was the reason for the change?
I think they just had partnered to come forward with this joint solution. MTX has a lot of public health expertise. I think they found Google easy to work with. We found their pricing to be a little easier to understand. It worked out to be a cheaper price.
I mean, it's almost like I don't want them to reinvent the wheel, but if, you know, they've already deployed it with Salesforce successfully, it's almost like, why don't you just not reinvent the wheel and just use what they have again? So love to understand, you know, the technical reasons. If there was anything that was more compelling than cost that made them switch from Salesforce to Google.
Well, I think they also just found it quicker to implement.
So there wasn't really a technical RFP that went out between all the vendors that could provide the solution. Is that my understanding?
Yes, there was not. Okay. These vendors were all coming to us through on-state contract.
Understood. And there's no doubt the county, because obviously being the largest county in Arizona, this is going to be something that they want to move quickly through. That's why they were thinking that they might be able to do it faster than maybe your organization, your agency. So again, time is important. I understand that. But if the product hasn't been released, you know, with the MTX Google, versus where MTX did it with Salesforce. Again, I've been saying it just raises a flag for me on that. The other thing the county mentioned to me was that they would like some language added into procurement that actually gives some flexibility to Maricopa County. I don't know where that is at in the procurement cycle, but is that language that the county team shared with you, is that part of this procurement contract? Can that be verified?
Yes, we did receive that information via Susan, and she might be able to talk to this better, but we are working to include that in the procurement.
Because I think that was one of the key pieces for them to sign up to this, if that language got added. So I just need to get confirmation that that language got added.
Yes, I'll take that action, Eddie.
Okay, thank you. And then my last question, you know, I did some research on MTX on Google. Looks like there's a big lawsuit in Texas with them. I don't know if it's based upon the product. I don't know, but it didn't sound really positive in Texas. Can there be some information shared with the board as to what the lawsuit is about? Is it a technology issue where they're not able to deliver, or is it something else?
No, we did check that reference. It wasn't technology or delivery related. It was more around the procurement, the quickness that contract was set. I think they told me it was like an 8-day procurement. And so it was more questions around that, not capabilities of MTX. And MTX in that circumstance was not even providing similar services. They had provided a contract tracing app and some contact tracing people, which is why I think the contract amount was so high. It's including all the people that are contact tracing. They used other companies, I think it was Deloitte, for integration and technical kind of things. So MTX really didn't provide any of that kind of work for that contract.
Okay, that's all the questions I have for right now. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Eddie. Any other members have questions?
Mr. Chair, I have a couple questions on the budget. I have two questions. My first question is, I think I heard that the main license fees could vary in the out years depending on usage, but is the development cost set at the $986,000? I just noticed that was below the $1 million threshold that this committee usually reviews.
I guess this is Paula. I'll take that again. Yes, the implementation fee is set, and the caveat on the subscription of Google Cloud is just that the licensing was based on, you know, anticipated usage, and in out years, you know, could vary depending on what we're doing with it. For example, if we do COVID and use it a lot in the next year, and then we use it for flu or something else in the second or third year, our usage could be less because we're not immunizing as many people, and so the cost may go down.
Paula, can I just ask, maybe try to clarify a little bit on Rebecca's question? You know, I don't want to confuse what is a licensing fee versus what is a subscription and utilization fee. Is the licensing of the content from, and I believe MTX is the provider in this case, is that licensing fixed, or is that a variable component to it as well?
The implementation costs?
No, whatever the licensing of the content from MTX, which I assume is bundled up in that 667, development cost. I know you have, there's the platform subscription cost that you have from Google, right?
Right.
And then there's the, I don't know if there's a licensing component to the application from MTX?
No, it's services from them.
Services, okay. All right.
And then in out years 2 through 5, it's M&O cost.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. My second question is just the fund sourcing. I noticed that it was only partially federally funded, so I didn't know if you could identify the other appropriated fund source for the project.
Paul, you want me to grab that?
Susan, yeah, you might know more about that.
So the goal with this, right, we're using COVID as sort of a way to launch the concept of being able to ease the burden on the counties overall. And so when we came to them, we talked about doing some cost sharing amongst the counties as well. For this first round, we're using federal funds. We're making sure that it's just covered because we know as a state, we just need to get this done. And so we're doing that. And we'll be coming back to the table with the counties to work through some of those options, but we also have potential within preparedness and immunization as well to, from a state perspective, continuing to fund some of these as well. So the goal is really to make this a statewide, counties, you know, all part of it, and make it part of their systems, which to Eddie's point is important to have them to be able to change and make the system their own. But that is sort of the conversation we've had with them. And everyone's pretty open to that. We figured we'd get through the COVID situation first and dig through the rest of that later, but that is the goal.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I have a question. Go ahead.
Tell you.
Go for it, Brian.
Okay, so back to the question around the RFP from a technology perspective. Without doing an RFP, how have you guys assessed the ability for the solution to work and or the integration requirements, the data flow requirements, anything like that to be something that we can deliver on our side, let alone the vendor on their side? Is there any effort been put into the integration and implementation efforts on the integration piece specifically?
The integration is going to be using HL7, which our systems already consume and interface that way. So it should ease the integration process of what we need to go through there. I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, so maybe, Paul, if you could talk a bit more about, and this might be between you and Namrantha, the process for, like, when you talked about engaging 4 different vendors, you know, were they provided requirements? Were they provided with, you know, like, what was that process? What was provided to them that they could respond to support this? You know, I think when I hear both potentially Brian and Eddie, you know, asking for lack of an RFP, you know, how were the requirements expressed to the vendors so that you knew that, you know, sort of the information you had provided to them, and then you were able to then evaluate the responses that came back?
I guess, yes, we had requirements document that was shared with them, and they basically were asked to come in and, you know, demo what they had against that. And I guess one more clarification, Eddie, to your earlier question, MTX had deployed some of these types of functions using Google with different jurisdictions. So putting this stuff together uniquely for our workflow is kind of the work at hand, but we felt like a lot of these pieces have been implemented in other places and could be, you know, easily pieced together to make the solution we're looking for. So I think that's another reason they were able to have the speed to market that they can demonstrate, which was shorter than other parties could provide. And to Nita's point, the prep mod was theoretically the quickest to implement, but we just didn't feel like when all the states got going together that they had the bandwidth to provide the support necessary, you know, to make that successful. So we were just scared about that from a support standpoint.
Okay. And Paul, in terms of the, in your requirements, to drill a little bit into what I heard Brian asking, did you also include HL7 messaging and the data integration requirements and expectations as part of those requirements?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Paul, I can say really quick, we kind of did a tiered level. So we were at the state level. That's really where we were trying to grab the systems requirements of HL7 and integrating back into ACES. We also spent some time with our county partners and tribal partners collecting sort of that front end. What are your requirements for the system to do? And we're able to combine those into a single document to share as sort of the holistic view of both the system integration and sort of the needs on our side, but also what the counties were needing and what they needed this tool to do.
Okay, thank you. Hey, Brian, I want to hand it back to you to make sure that we've answered your question and whether you had anything further to ask.
That basically covers it. I think the takeaway I'm walking away with is that we're moving fast, obviously. We're taking some trust in the vendor, and we're going to deal with anything that would normally be found in an RFP as we go. So within the confines of the approval they get and how they manage that project, as long as that's understood, approved, acceptable, all those things, then it is what it is. But it sounds like they've at least done some of the basic due diligence on data security requirements and those types of things. Is that accurate?
Yes, we did. And ASSET also helped vet the security pieces in addition to ourselves.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this is Chuck. Just a talk from the oversight perspective for Mr. Kirkland. As part of the pitch process and the recommendation to bring forward today, there was a security review done, as well as a great deal of due diligence by the oversight team, as well as the engagement team, to include meeting with both vendors and joint with the agency, and going through a lot of the same questions you had today, all the way from the technical up to the project management. So.
Okay. Any further questions?
Hi, this is Eddie. I will tell you that in reading the pitch, it's probably one of the lightest documented pitches I've seen of all the ones I've seen since I've been on this board. I mean, the answers were extremely short and there wasn't very much information in it. So going back to that RFP, as Mr. Kirkland was saying, I know there's importance on timing and time frame, because obviously Maricopa County, you know, doesn't want to do this by paper, and they do want to get something, more automated to, obviously this is going to impact the county, Maricopa County, the most, because we have the most population. But I guess, Mr. Chair, with your team, do you feel that your team has done a thorough oversight of the technology that's being presented here?
So, Eddie, my best response to that would be, I'm confident in the work that the Chuck and the oversight team does, and engaging the agencies, and I'll say providing a level of due diligence over and above what the agency goes through. I think that from my own interactions with the Department of Health Services, I mean, they understand the critical nature of this application. While they're, as has been stated, are we trying to move quickly? Yes. That's just the nature of the environment that we're in now, that the need for this is coming forward, and is the providers of vaccine are working through their approval processes and authorization processes. A system needs to be in place and ready to go. And so I think that health services has great interest in ensuring that system is not only in place, meets the requirements, and will serve the state well. So I do believe that they have come forward with, a properly vetted set of requirements, and we've sought to, apply our oversight process to that in asking our questions. But, that's the reason these things come before this committee is to, further vet, these types of things, and to even raise cover the question that Rebecca Pereira raised around the fact that the total dollar amount of this is below the $1 million threshold that this committee would normally review. And it was the recommendation of Asset to go ahead and bring this forward, and just to increase the transparency. And also so that we wouldn't end up in a circumstance that, for any occasion, since I think any solution they were looking at was going to be pretty close to this threshold, that we wouldn't be in a place where I feel it's uncomfortable to come back to the committee after a project is underway and say, oh, something changed in the project. That's what pushed it over the $1 million. And now you're being asked to, you know, approve a change order where you really don't have any input on the original project.
Last question, as it relates to the other smaller 14 counties compared to Maricopa County, as it relates to their cost to integrate with the system, I don't know what that might look like for them. Can someone share with us, will they be able to take advantage of this new solution at a minimal cost with those counties?
That's 100% the goal, is to make sure that this is something that is available to all of our counties and tribes, all Arizonans really, and ensure that what we're doing with our vaccine, we're getting data properly, but there's so many things with COVID right now that this kind of tool is really critical. So this needs to be available to everyone, and absolutely we'll make sure that that is the case.
Thanks, Eddie. Any final questions? Okay, I will turn it back over to Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Asset is recommending that the PIDGE be approved with the following condition. Should development costs exceed the approved estimate by 10% or more, or should there be significant changes to the proposed technology scope of work or the implementation schedule, the agency must amend the PIDGE to reflect the changes and submit it to ADOA Asset and ITAC if required for review and approval prior to further expenditure of funds.
All right. Do we have any questions on those conditions? Okay. If there are any further questions, we'll entertain a motion with regards to the project.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to approve.
All right, Tim, thank you. Do we have a second?
This is Jaggi. I have a second. Thank you.
Thank you, Jaggi. Okay, all those in favor of approval?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, that is a unanimous approval. Thank you, Health Services team. Paula, we're going to go ahead and keep you up for your next item, which is the licensing system implementation. But if you need to swap out some other team members, feel free to do so.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name, once again, is Haley Greenberg, and I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I am joined here today by members of the Arizona Department of Health Services, who will introduce themselves now, followed by a brief overview of the project.
Oh, hi. This is Colby Bauer. I'm an assistant director with the Division of Licensing at the Arizona Department of Health Services.
And this is Paula Mattingly, CIO.
Tom Salo, I'm a branch chief here.
And Luke Evans, Project Management Office of Information Technology Section at DHS.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, in 2011, the Arizona Department of Health Services, ADHS, was tasked with implementing the Arizona Medical Marijuana Act. ADHS developed a web-based medical marijuana system being concurrent with the generation of the rules and characteristics that defined the requirements of the medical marijuana system. In August of 2019, the Arizona Department of Health Services medical marijuana system was approved by ADOA Asset and later approved by ITAC Committee in September of 2019. The project leveraged newer technology to replace paper and printing processes associated with the old system, including a digital card solution. The voter initiative in the November 2020 election passed setting parameters for the adult use of marijuana in Arizona. ADHS is now seeking the ITAC approval to leverage the use of the existing medical marijuana licensing solution and build out services online in support of the initiative, some of which must be online by January of 2021. Asset is recommending the change request be approved with conditions, which we can review after the presentation. I will turn this over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed change request and answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Haley. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, today we'd like to start out with providing a state of our project, followed by introducing the change request, then examining the solution, team responsibilities, finances and benefits, ending with closing remarks and question and answer. Next slide.
Hi, this is Tom Shale with the department. I'm gonna highlight some of the successes that we've had for the pre-approved project. Last year, December 1st, we switched to an electronic card. About 250,000 cards were created electronically, eliminating the need for mail and printed cards. In May, we enhanced the existing system and we had some electronic options for our dispensary licensees that we did not have previously. And then in June of this year, we had a portal access where our cardholders can see their transaction history, their licensing history, as well as having access through the portal to the electronic card. And then just recently, we've made some more enhancements to the system to offer additional functionality to the dispensary licensees.
Next slide.
Hello, members of the committee. Mr. Chairman, this is Colby Bauer, Assistant Director with the Department of Health Services. So as everyone is probably aware, Prop 207, which was passed by the voters, it's yet to be certified, but we expect that to occur later this month, legalizing medical marijuana for adult use. And that that proposition puts upon the department that we need to go ahead and work on building out the from our current system to accommodate this adult use. Specifically in three areas. First and foremost, these new adult use facilities will have something called a facility agent card. And so we need to build out that application process as well as the card processing piece of that. There will be a new type of dispensary. These are essentially adult use dispensaries. And so we need to get that process automated as well by January 19th, 2021. And then just in looking at where the two initiatives, the medical marijuana piece and the adult piece, sort of converge, we want to make sure we utilize and optimize the system to go ahead and fully put in this e-licensing program for all of marijuana in Arizona. And then, of course, automate the QA testing as much as possible. So what we're asking for is ITAC approval to leverage the same system integration firm, SHI, to implement a phased rollout and maintenance transition of adult use marijuana and shared medical recreational functionality over the course of the next year.
Next slide. For the proposed changes that Colby outlined, the solution will require the continuance of the system integration team, as he said, as well as adding the additional e-licensing subscriptions to support the adult use functionality. We will also procure a test automation package and of course retain our independent verification and validation partnership. This will allow us to utilize the existing application platform and data integration engine. Next slide. We are continuing our system integration partnership, who will take point on day-to-day sprint management and business requirements gathering. The shared responsibilities will include application releases, development, DevOps, communications, and training. And lastly, the agency will take responsibility for items such as quality assurance, user acceptance, financial, project, and license management. Next slide. This change request plans to have four distinct releases, the first being the mid-January adult use establishment application and employee card generations, as we had mentioned before, followed in the spring by establishment ownership self-service to improve the efficiencies for businesses and the agency alike. And this will culminate in Q3 and Q4 to add additional customer and process-focused release functionality and a transition to maintenance and operations, supporting both the adult use and medical use programs. Next slide. Here is the two tables of the summarized financials. To fulfill the mission to integrate and support adult use and further strengthen marijuana programs as a whole, the proposed financial additions total roughly $10 million over the next 4 years, the majority being the addition of new and enhanced application functionality. Licensing, Branch Chief Tom Sallow will now elaborate on the benefits of these additions to his division. Next slide.
So for that $10 million, some of the benefits that we're hoping to achieve from it is to, in response to a performance audit that the department received a report on from the summer of 2019, and that has to do with how we handle some of our inspections for our then medical marijuana dispensaries. We're also hoping that this can mitigate future litigation. We've had a history of litigation with the marijuana program in the past. We're hoping to simplify our public records requests. Medical marijuana does not allow us to disclose a lot of information, but the adult use program does not have that same confidentiality clause in it. We're hoping for better applications, higher quality, more complete, and this overall customer satisfaction.
Next slide.
Well, members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, this is really just the concluding piece here. I do want to point out to the committee that one thing, Mr. Salo, you know, just talking about some of those benefits, I think this is one case where we can look at the previous work the department has put in, and the vendor, of course, for the medical marijuana piece, and we're really looking at this as a way to continue to build out that system while achieving the statutory mandated goals and requirements of the new initiative that just passed. And so it wouldn't have been possible, of course, without the committee's approval of the Salesforce platform and our integrator and everything. And so we'll just open it up for question and answers. I know we have a short turnaround time on this, but we're confident we can make this happen by January 19th.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bauer and DHS team. I'll open it up to the committee for questions.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, this is Stuart.
Yes, Stuart.
Can I just ask a really general question, and that is of the team, why would this not be a separate project for a separate scope rather than a complication of a current underway project and its scope?
Yeah, sure. I can take that, Chuck, unless you want to. I was pretty much going to ask you to maybe talk to this. We had talked with Haley, Chuck, and his team, and that was the direction that we got based on where we were at with our development of the previous project, which we are in the final stages of.
Yep. Thank you, Luke, and Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The short answer is there's an ongoing project, and for the purposes of transparency and to stay within our statutory guidelines, which specifically tell us not to unnecessarily split project, because we were still in our approved development effort of the system and we're utilizing that system to build off of, we felt it was best to keep this project together, keep all of the approvals together, and just remain as transparent as possible by showing the connection in the dual efforts. So, and we're also using the same integrator partnership with the agency. So that's kind of the short answer to it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
go ahead, Eddie.
Yeah, Mr. Quick question. Obviously, with the passing of Proposition 207 and the earmark of monies that are collected through the sales tax, I don't know if there's any provisions where unintentional consequences of Prop 207 puts on additional cost to things like this. Can we, from the state, recover those costs to build out these types of technology systems based upon the sales of Prop 207?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, yes, we believe so. So the Prop 207 basically provides that the costs for the department to run the program are operated on a reimbursement schedule. And so the department basically will tally up its costs at whatever interval, and I don't know what that is just yet, but whatever interval that is, and then we are basically reimbursed based on the excise tax, the 17% that is placed on the sale of adult use marijuana.
All right, thank you for answering my question.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Okay, if there's nothing further, I'll hand it back to you, Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. ACID is recommending that the change request be approved with the following standard condition. Should expenses exceed the estimated cost by 10% or more, or should there be significant changes to the proposed technology, scope of work, or implementation schedule, the agency must amend the change request to reflect the changes and submit it to ADOA ACID for review and approval by ITAC prior to further expenditure of funds.
Okay, so standard conditions, any questions on that? Okay, we'll move forward and say, if anyone has a entertain a motion with regard to the project.
Mr. Stewart, I'll move for approval of the change to the project.
Okay.
With the conditions stated.
Stewart moves for approval of the thing with conditions.
Whatever it is, I move for approval.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
All right, thank you, Tim. All those in favor of approval?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, unanimous. Thank you very much, Health Services team. We will now move on to back up in our agenda to the Department of Administration. It's bringing forward an item on the Inventory Management Initiative.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Shayna Schaller, and I'm an engagement manager with Arizona Department of Administration. I'm joined today by members from the Arizona Department of Administration's Enterprise Security Team. I'll turn it over to them to introduce themselves, after which I will give a brief overview of the action item.
Gary, did you want to get started?
Sorry, I was on mute. Gary Hinckley, Chief Operating Officer, ADOA Asset, one of the project sponsors.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Tim Romer. I'm the state's Chief Information Security Officer.
Good afternoon. My name is Jennifer Pittman-Leeper. I am the Enterprise Security Program Advisory Council Administrator.
Michael Johnson, Senior IT Project Manager, ADOA.
I think it's probably worth noting to the committee, Tim has officially moved himself to the other side of the table for this item. He will be recusing himself from voting.
Yes, thank you, JR. I am abstaining from voting.
And we do have three members from our Tanium team on the call, and I'll let them introduce themselves.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for having us today. My name is Tim Howell. I'm the Regional Vice President for State and Local Government for the Western United States. Also with me is Sean Jackson, Regional Vice President of Technical Account Management for the Mountain States, and Ben Carter, who's a Technical Account Manager.
Great. Okay, thank you for those introductions. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, as the state of Arizona workforce transitioned to a more remote setting due to COVID-19, and with the continued onslaught of cyber threats, the state is in need of increased environment transparency to accurately identify risks and successfully defend against potential vulnerabilities. To meet this need, the Department of Administration seeks the approval from the ITAC committee to provide the state with an enterprise solution for asset inventory and management for hardware and software. The solution not only will provide the state with technology needed to manage both devices on and off the network, but is also in line with the Center for Internet Security Top 20 Critical Security Controls. The proposed solution has been reviewed and accepted by the Enterprise Security Program Advisory Council as a measurement standard for enterprise cybersecurity. I will now turn this over to the Enterprise Security team to present the project information and answer any questions you may have.
Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the committee. This is Gary Hensley. I will kick it off for the team. I wanted to give you a brief overview of what had taken place and how we got to this point. Originally, this was a effort undertaken under for the Goal Council 5 as part of the initiative for cost savings and gaining efficiencies and the speed of business for Governor Ducey's mandate. The CIO Council had identified key personnel to look at desktop as a service. It eventually got filtered back into the organization to deep dive on the capabilities that would exist in a desktop as a service program or initiative. The desktop as a service became very, very complex. We had engaged with several agencies, but there were a lot of things that we didn't know. We couldn't determine the total volume of desktops that were in the environment, how much RAM or how much they had for computing space, size, types, models, makes, age. We didn't have the granular view of what we needed to know in order to make a desktop as a service a successful platform and initiative. We needed to find out more information. We needed to garner additional inventory components of what was the CPU and RAM and make, model, type, and age of the equipment. We didn't have enough agency participation to make a determination on a bigger scale that would make a desktop as a service an equitable effort to where we would recognize cost savings and economies of scale. As we stepped through this, we had interviewed quite a few different companies as far as inventory management was concerned, and we wanted to get our hands around hardware as it related to what the agencies had, so that we could glean that information back in order to make determinations of can we implement contracts for desktops and laptops that we could gain economies of scale based upon volume and make sure that from a security perspective, we did not have aged equipment out there and aged operating systems as what we were coming across in a small sampling. As an effort, we kicked off a proof of concept that ADOA undertook, plus its managed agencies. And then we expanded in a second proof of concept, including a lot of the state agencies, boards, and commissions to start gathering that inventory. So I wanted to give you some historical background on how this inventory initiative started. It started for a different purpose, which the desktop as a service initiative has been pushed back into further phases as it becomes necessary. And I'll turn it over to Jennifer Pittman-Leeper. She was the project manager as we went through the proof of concepts. She can give you more of the details and with assistance from the Tanium team.
Great. Thank you, Gary. Tim, did you want to say a couple of words from the security perspective before I get started?
I would. Thank you, Jennifer. I'd like to echo a couple of the points that Gary Hensley just made as our chief operating officer with an asset. It's been a tremendous pleasure to work with him and his operations team on this project. The context that he just gave is really helpful to everybody, to the chairman and the board, of understanding what was behind the initial part of this project and what we were out to solve. And then as Gary noted, it became very much a part of security and how this would make the state more secure. And I would just like to say that even prior to the global pandemic and the teleworking environment that we're operating in right now, this is a tool that we figured we would need. We need that inventory management. We need that insight into what devices are on our systems, how dated they are, what software is there. And the way I would describe it is, as our cybersecurity team battles criminal hackers, nation state actors, and hacktivists all day, every day, we don't have a fighting chance if we don't have insight and visibility into seeing what is on our systems, what is being operated, what needs to be fixed, and how we can fix it. We won't have a fighting chance. It's like, you know, this project is taking us from having zero visibility on a battlefield against these criminals at night to this tool and this project giving us night vision goggles to go out and be able to see and operate and go ahead and take care of and mitigate those threats. And for us operating the cybersecurity world right now, and the things that keep me up at night as the state's chief information security officer and the one that has that, you know, authority or responsibility and trust from the citizens of Arizona in statute, this is something that does keep me up at night, not having visibility, not being able to see it, not being able to patch and take care of the things that are in our own backyard when we're under such a heightened, increased level of threats right now. And I really do mean it when I say, you know, the night vision goggles and operating at night, because, you know, it's like our cybersecurity team was fighting these criminals on more of an even playing surface during daytime, and now during a global pandemic with more vulnerabilities out there, more attacks coming at us, and so much more fear that's being thrown our way, it's really like operating in the dark at night. But I just want to thank everybody who's been involved in this project for being able to help find such a great tool. And I'm using that metaphor of the night vision goggles, but to give us insight and visibility to see the things that we can take care of that will better protect all of the citizens of Arizona and our data. So this is something that I'm very passionate about. I get very excited about, and I'm thrilled to hear more from Jennifer Pittman-Leeper on the details. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Next slide, please. Mr. Chairman, members, as you've heard from both the Chief Operating Officer as well as the state's CISO, what we are looking to tackle is a very complicated problem. It involves both operations as well as security. Because these state agencies are allowed to deploy and support their individual devices independently, there are inefficiencies that are created and also a lack of visibility. Unfortunately, it creates a situation where we're not able to purchase using economies of scale. So this goes back to what Gary was explaining, that we are looking to find a way to maximize some of those purchases. And the only way we can do that is if we know what we have in our environment currently. There is no enterprise-wide solution for asset inventory and management of software or hardware, which is indeed a CIS top 20 security control. Additionally, without understanding your environment, it's impossible to protect it. So it makes the job of enterprise security that much more difficult without knowing what we're supposed to be protecting. When the COVID pandemic began, we now have 41% of our state population working from home. We aren't able to do the regular maintenance on these devices, which leaves us exposed for some of the hackers that keep Tim up at night. So the benefits of a new system, the remote device management, it gives us the ability to patch, to remediate, to upgrade devices that aren't even connected to the state's network. This solution would also give us the ability to work on devices that are on the state network. It gives us that increased visibility into our assets so that we know exactly what we're working on, when we need to work on it, and we know anything that's connecting to our environment. It gives us the ability to accurately identify our assets and thereby the risks as well. It gives us the ability to coordinate our responses to any risks that we find. By having a single enterprise solution, we can see something that may pop up in one agency, and then we can begin looking to see if it exists, that threat exists anywhere else in the environment. That results in overall increased security for the entire enterprise. It allows us to automate tasks such as patching, and that expands our existing staff's resource and their availability. It also identifies opportunities for cost savings. As we're able to identify the software that is deployed throughout the state, we can also look at the utilization to see if we need that many licenses and potentially purchase fewer copies. So software license reclamation could additionally be an added benefit of this program by allowing us to only buy what we're really needing. Next slide, please. We had a very detailed procurement with this particular solution. We began over a year ago with a multifunctional committee. This is very important. Many solutions that come to you are just security or just operations. But this involves both the business units, the operations. It involves cybersecurity. It involves all of those different teams working together to find a solution. We drafted the technical requirements. From there, we worked with our state procurement office, and we went out to all 9 vendors that are on state contracts for the SBAR, networking, and cloud. They were able to then recommend vendors to us to come in and provide us with demonstrations. The committee selected 2 different vendors for initial proof of concept. One of those proof of concepts failed. The other proof of concept was the Tanium proof of concept. It was an initial limited scope. We had about 1,200 devices for the initial proof of concept. It lasted about a month, and it was just performed on ADOA and the managed agencies. It was a very successful proof of concept, and with that, we decided to expand the proof of concept to a much more robust proof of concept across the enterprise. It involved 77 agencies and 24,000 devices. It was a production-level proof of concept. After the proof of concept was over, we gathered feedback from all of the agencies to find out if the tool was meeting their needs, if it was working in their environment, and what their thought was about ease of use. We received multiple quotes from multiple vendors. We went back and forth with those vendors and negotiated what the eventual price would be for this tool. And the Tanium tool will be purchased off of an existing state contract. The technology is enterprise-wide solution. It will be hosted at the state shared hosted data center on servers. It will cause unified endpoint management and security. Tanium, it's an agent that's going to be installed on all the workstations and servers, both physical as well as virtual. The agent will be interactive. What that means is that we can actually query the agents that are installed and ask it random questions and get results back in real time. We also will have some data that is able to be more static and will be able to be utilized for some reports if that's what you want. You can get dynamic, real-time, live information based in your entire enterprise. It's also able to execute commands, actions, scripts, and other executable programs that allow it to be very, very useful for us in a lot of different ways. Next slide, please. This slide really talks about the partnership with the vendor and the agencies. As I indicated, this is an enterprise-wide solution, So ADOA will be administering the program, and we will have certain responsibilities outside of the other agencies that they have to do, like console configuration, making sure that the rule-based access controls are all assigned and given out to the agencies according to what they would like to do. But just like the other agencies, ADOA and all of the agencies will have a responsibility to deploy it to all of the endpoints, including servers. The agencies will need to designate technical resources to respond to the information and the alerts that are generated and to work with the system, including business teams. We will also be looking to develop an oversight committee. This committee would be multi-agency, and it's to make sure that we're really taking into consideration all of the needs and desires from all of the agencies. We will develop policies, best practices, and the configurations based on our vendors' recommendations, best practices, and our knowledge of the environment. We will have some shared responsibilities. Training. The vendor will provide the training, and we've already created a library of training videos for the agencies to use, but the agencies must participate with those videos. They must watch the videos to learn how to use the tool. The documentation. Again, the vendor provided the documentation. It'll be up to the agencies to make sure that they read through all of the documentation. And then updates. The vendor will provide the updates, and the Tanium administrator will need to configure and install. The vendor will be responsible for supporting the platform and infrastructure of the Tanium solution. They will be providing technical resources as part of this project, and they will be providing professional of the Tanium admins. Next slide. A lot of activity on this slide, but I just wanted to provide, there's essentially two phases, like Gary spoke of, that we've done so far. Phase one is already complete. It was the proof of concept phase. As I mentioned, we did an initial proof of concept with ADOA and the managed agencies. That was back in December of 2019. It had limited functionality. We did not test all of the modules. We just looked at minimum functionality, and we wanted to make sure that it was a viable solution. As I indicated, that was a successful proof of concept, which led to our expanded proof of concept with 77 agencies. That went from May through August of this year. We expanded the functionality. We expanded all of the modules that we looked at. And then we tested additional use cases and multi-tenancy functionality as well during that second proof of concept. The project that we bring before you today is all about operationalization. That's what we're calling phase two. In phase two, we will be doing the actual purchase of the licenses. We will be doing syncing Active Directories so that each agency's Active Directory syncs into this program for the, themselves. That'll help with getting users into the system. We will finish Okta integration with the remaining agencies. We actually did initial Okta integration with almost all of the agencies during the proof of concept. We had a couple of outstanding ones that we did not complete during the phase one that we will be doing during this phase. And we're going to be redefining the role-based access controls to make sure that it's in alignment with the vendor recommended best practices to really limit who has access to the different modules and at what level. From an operations perspective, we will be establishing that oversight committee that I spoke of earlier. We have found with several of our enterprise solutions that it works better to have a multi-agency oversight committee that has a vested interest in how it works. Only they can tell us how it works best at their agency. So having them together in that oversight role will help this to be a better program. We will be doing training of all of the people that will be using it. During the proof of concept, we had more than 300 users that were using this across the enterprise. And the big part of phase two is going to be the deployment of the agents. We have between 23 and 24,000 agents that were deployed during the proof of concept. So we have about 14,500 more to go. I will tell you that we deployed those 23, 24,000 agents in effectively just over a month, 45 days, somewhere in that time frame. So for us to go ahead and deploy the remaining 14,500 should not take us that long to do, but we're going to go ahead and give ourselves a little bit extra time on that. So we're giving ourselves through May of 2021 to complete that activity. Next slide. This is all about the budget. The professional services will be roughly $357,000. That is to make sure that the Tanium administrators are fully trained. That involves some week-long activities that we'll be doing, as well as regular daily type activities. There'll be some training involved in that. And then, of course, you see there the license and maintenance fees. The license and maintenance fees that are listed there will provide us a 20-month agreement with the vendor. And then in the FY22-23, you see the other operating expenditures. That is an initial estimate of what hiring full-time Tanium admin will cost. Next slide. So what does success look like to us? We want to make sure that we have a robust change management system in place so that when we make changes to the environment, everyone is aware of them, they're communicated well. We have several milestones that we put out there. One of them, like I mentioned earlier, was to configure the Active Directories and sync those back to the Tanium server. That should be done before the end of this year. We will be establishing an oversight committee in the following few weeks. We'll be finishing Okta integration by the end of January, redefining our role-based access controls by the end of January, and deploying the remaining 14,500 agencies by the end of May. How are we going to measure the success? Deployment of at least 95% of Tanium agents by the end of May, by establishing the oversight committee with multi-agency participation of at least 5 different agencies involved, connecting all the users via Okta. It's very important to us to use a single sign-on. It adds additional security for the people that are actually using the Tanium console, not the end users, but for the Tanium console. And then connecting all of the agencies via their own active directories. That's how we measure success for this project. Next slide. So I'm going to actually turn this back over to Shayna to explain what we're requesting approval for. You don't want it yet?
No, thanks. It's still you.
Okay. We're going to request approval for the purchase of the Tanium licenses and professional services. We were going to purchase and deploy those agents on workstations and servers, operationalization and optimization of the tool, say that 5 times fast, and training of the support staff and agency staff. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. We'll open up to the committee for any questions.
Mr. Chairman, this is Stuart. I've got a couple of technical questions maybe JPL can take a stab at.
Sure.
Go for it.
I'm interested in the distribution process of these clients. You had mentioned both on network and off network. I'm fascinated to know how you're going to distribute clients that are state hosted off the network.
Sure. Mr. Chairman Stewart, that was actually a challenge during the proof of concept because, as you'll remember, the proof of concept began in May and many of our people were already off network. We had to get creative. I will tell you, every agency handled it in a different way, and even within agencies, sometimes we had to use multiple approaches. One way that it could, and it depends on how the agency was configured, some agencies use other tools, such as SCCM, that allows for, you know, reaching those devices, and they could install the client that way. Some agencies had to do a very manual approach and go around and get hands-on keyboards. They had to bring people in to get the agent installed. So really it depends on the agency, but we were able to get it done. Like I said, between 23 and 24,000 endpoints were eventually installed. We just had to work through it to get it all done.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. If I can follow up on that, she mentioned SCCM. I'm wondering what happens when an agency's already got clients on those remote and devices, and now you come along and stick another client on there. Is there a fight? Does one win out over the other? How does that work?
Mr. Chairman, Stuart, actually a lot of different tools require agents to be installed. Several of the enterprise security tools, SCCM, as I mentioned, for, you know, patching also requires an agent. So there is no conflict having multiple agents installed on a single device. There's no fighting amongst the agents. But it's actually one of the benefits of the Tanium tool is that we can look and see what type of memory is being utilized on machines. So we can actually make sure and optimize the machines and make sure that they're configured correctly so that we don't have any end user impact.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I can ask just one more on the server side. JPL, what kind of experience did server operators have when you kind of stuck these agents on the server? I say that because sometimes those can be touchy and people, you know, get a performance degradation, or there have to be exclusions for certain services put in place and stuff because the agent uses some overhead up. So what can you tell me about your server experience?
You are 100% accurate. That does have to be considered, and so the vendor was very clear with us any kinds of exceptions with any other software products that would be running. They were very clear with us with different types of server devices, different things to take into consideration. There's different configuration that needs, or whether it's a physical device. So all of that has to be taken into consideration and is taken into consideration when we provide the instructions to the agencies about how to install. It wouldn't be fair for me to say that there were zero issues across the board, no issues on workstations or servers. Of course there were. But that's where a very strong partnership with your vendor becomes incredibly important. That's why we're recommending professional services be included in this purchase, because the vendor worked very closely, and I have to give shout out to them. Anytime we had any of those kinds of issues, they were quick to get on phone calls with us for us to begin looking at it. And by having the agent on the machine, we were able to quickly resolve whatever the problem was and move about our day.
Thank you. If I can follow up on that, just one, it looks like professional services are going to run out in FY22. So obviously the bulk of the work is going to be done, because by May 31st, you believe you're going to have at least 90 some odd percent of these out there. What are you going to do for these conflicts? You know, new software that gets installed and now shows up with new conflicts. How are you going to support that in FY22 and following?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Stuart, that's a great question. So that's the nice thing about this company that we're trying to go into a partnership with. So the professional services that we're purchasing for the initial phase, that's for initial configuration, for the beginning setup, for all of those types of pieces. But we will have a designated technical account manager. We'll have multiple designated technical account managers. They will always be available to us. That's just included in the regular licensing fees. We're asking for additional on top of those regular level of professional services. We're asking for additional service to help us with initial configurations.
Got it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The prosecution rests.
Thanks, Stuart. Any other questions from the committee members?
Mr. Chair, I have a question naturally on the budget.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is a question for Jennifer or someone else at DOA, but the DOA fiscal year 2022 budget request asked for funding for this. So it's now appearing that it's being, there's available funding. So I was wondering if you could speak to the fund sourcing and how you work that magic.
Mr. Chairman, Rebecca, it's just that. It's budget magic. That's how we did it. A little more detail than that? Okay. Basically, what we did, this is coming out of the enterprise security budget for this year. We're buying 20-month licenses, which gets us through June of 2022. So we won't need any additional funds from that perspective until then. Don't worry, come back with more asks later, I promise. The way that we actually freed that up on this year's budget we were able to offset some of our prior expenditures through CARES Act funding. So those expenditures came off of current year expense, which made the room in this year's budget.
Makes sense to me. Thank you.
Like I said, magic.
All right. Any other questions from the committee? If not, I'll turn it back over to you, Shana.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. ASSET is recommending the PIDGE be approved with the following condition. Should expenditures expenses exceed the estimated cost by 10% or more, or should there be significant changes to the proposed technology, scope of work, or implementation schedule, the agency must amend the PIDGE to reflect the changes and submit to ADOA ASSET for review and approval by ITAC prior to the further expenditure of funds. Thank you.
Okay, so standard condition. Any questions on the condition? Okay, I will entertain a motion with regards to the project.
I'll move to approve the project as described.
All right, thank you, Gilbert. Do we have a second?
Yeah, this is Jaggy. Oh, I have a second. Okay.
We got a race for the second. We'll give it to Jaggy. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that carries unanimously. Thank you, DOA team. And we will move on to our final item, which is information only. This is not a voting item, but it's an informational update by the Department of Education.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Yan Gao, and I am an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I am here joined by members of the Department of Education who will introduce themselves, followed by an informational update to the overall status of their school finance payment system replacement project. Mr. Chairman, I believe Satish is on mute.
If Satish is dialed in via phone, star six will unmute him.
Can you hear?
There we go.
Thank you very much. I'm really sorry. I thought I did it. Thank you, Ann, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Satish Patisapu. I am the Chief Information Officer at Arizona Department of Education. I'm joined by my team members who will introduce themselves when there is a question that relates to their area or them to answer. That, I turn it over to Yan.
So this will be an informational item only, so feel free to go to the next slide and back to you, Satish.
Hi. Thank you, Yan, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. As you see, the project health card overall we are continuing to stay in green. The development and business analysis teams have been continuing to produce or meet the objectives of both requirements as well as meeting the deadlines of development tasks. I'm moving into development milestones. The information that you're seeing there is a couple of weeks old or a week, few days old. There is a bit of updated information that I have. The total of 27 milestones have already been completed in phase one, part one. Whereas the child development milestone, we are still at 85% only because QA of the developed milestones are still in progress. And the overall APOR requirement is sitting at 80% since the last update. And APOR calculations requirements, I was told before this meeting that they have completed it to 100%, and the information, the documentation will be released to tech advisors by close of business today. And last time when I mentioned about APOR adjustments requirements, I think they are sitting between 40-45% as we stand today. Moving on to the budget item, we are still keeping it in yellow because we are trying to get a good sense on how invoicing is happening, and you know, we are not definitely over budget or under budget. We are being very cautious. And moving into risk, from the last update or last couple of updates, with while working with ADOA, we added one more risk, which has been which will be in the appendix and in risk log. It's basically the documentation review committee. Before the documentation review committee gets the document, entire set of documentations approved, we will be starting development work on that. And we are being cautious in the ADOA and us came to an agreement that we will open a risk and monitor that. And if at all there is a change from request from the review committee, then we will have to address it on our own. And as it stands, issues, there are no current ones. Next slide, please. Quite a bit of updates since the presentation was created. The first item, document review, when I came to ITAC last time, we mentioned that on October 23rd, we will have a documentation review committee. It happened, and all the documents that are listed in the first bullet have already been approved. And between last meeting and this meeting, we had another documentation review committee meeting conducted last Friday. And the second bullet, everything got approved during that meeting. So there is correction, and that means next time when we come, we'll make those corrections, make those adjustments. Not corrections, it's basically additional detail. From milestone point of view, we are chugging along. There are a lot of milestones that got approved from the time that we last met. And pretty much, if not bi-weekly, we are having a weekly meeting with the business stakeholders as well as the executive steering committee and as the oversight, and performing the demos that includes both the documentation as well as the development tasks. And as I stated earlier in the previous slide, ADIT team is continuing to gather the requirements of A4 adjustment. From meetings and communications point of view, we will be coming in front of ITAC for the change request in the December meeting for seeking approval for phase one, part two. Next slide, please. Okay, I'm more than happy to take any questions from the committee. Thank you.
Okay, any questions from the committee on the informational update? All right, I'll just say from my perspective, Satish, sounds like you and team are continuing to make good progress. I think you sounds like the areas that you're watching in terms of budget and risks seems appropriate, and I appreciate the diligence that everyone's putting in on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I will remember Star 6 going forward. Thank you.
Okay, if there are any further questions, we will call the session to a close. Our next planned meeting is December 16th. And we'll see you all then. Thank you all for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Happy holidays.